So becoming more conscious, if we were all to become a whole lot more conscious that we have the power of all creation on the tip of our tongue, then what we could ultimately do is working in concert and consort with the moon in fanciful metaphoric language, we could help turn the tide on the global sea of consciousness, SEE. So we can become meta foretellers and envision a new life stream in which people are harmoniously in tune with creation.
My guest today is linguistic evolutionary and educational entertainer Laura Ergo, the creator of Word Magic Global, wordplay that unravels mass hypnosis and elevates the frequency of consciousness. Now, if you've been happening to wonder what good is wordplay at a time like this, please stay tuned, for Laura's Word Magic is a mind-bending, paradigm-shifting reintroduction to the English language that brings to light the hidden philosophy and puns, anagrams, and the symbols of the alphabet. Most people discover Laura's work through her global YouTube video, The Secret Spells of the English Language. In our conversation today, Laura shares with us all the hidden spells in the English language, which you might be aware, but you'll be probably surprised of how many words are keeping you bound to suffering, to mass hypnosis, and how many beautiful words you can tap into to empower yourself and to free yourself from this mass hypnosis one word at a time. A big word that kept coming into my field while talking to Laurel was, we are the wordsmiths of our reality. Through words, we can cut through illusion and open up new ways. I hope you enjoy this interview. Let's go for it. Laurel, Erica, what blessing to share space with you. As I was telling my partner that I was preparing for this interview, I'm always very excited. I'm always very prepared for any conversation I have with epic individuals. But this especially, I feel is one of the conversations I'm going to have that I'm really the most excited. It's like my highest excitement, which is words. English is my second language. So I was, even though I grew up with English since a young age, it's always been a second language. And I've lived in countries with English that are English speaking, and my partner is English speaking. Yet, I feel I don't even know the language speaking right now. After learning about your word, how there's all these other definitions and other ways to rephrase even simple word as love. And today is the day of love. It's Valentine's Day. So with lots of love and gratitude, welcome to Life Alchemy.
Oh, thank you so much. What a pleasure to be with you. Thank you, Jose.
So I don't like to define things, but if I had to, like I was explaining my partner, like Laurel, it's a wordsmith. You know, there's silversmith, there's Jedi's, and Laurel is a wordsmith. I feel you bring a whole new awareness into words, at least into my life, and I'm sure thousands of people around the world. And it's very significant. Like, words are just words without the knowledge. But one of the first things that I learned when I was going to church school was, in the beginning, there was the word.
Yes. So the word is foundational to everything. The vibrations that we speak, field of energy that we emit through our words. Greg Braden has a wonderful program on Gaia called Think It's Language and the Matrix, and how our words make the neural connections in the brain and connect us to the matrix. The larger matrix in which we live. And he and Dr. Bruce Lipton talk about a single word can up-level or down-level gene expression. And There's research being done in Russia, I believe it is, that pairs linguists and geneticists together. And they find that gene expression can be changed through words without knives and without cutting. So we, through our speaking, have sovereignty over the expression of the physical, mental, emotional body we live in. And especially, again, when we tune ourselves, holding the intention to access and embody the highest frequency of our own unique expression, then the words we speak are healing, both for ourselves and for other people. So much more to say about that in terms of wordsmith. I've played with that, and I have all sorts of little titles for myself that have popped into my head. Once I was out in a wilderness park, and I asked, "Well, how do I define myself?" And the answer came that I'm a meta-whimsical lingophysicist. And so there's many others, catalytic converter of consciousness through wordplay, because a single word can pivot our perspective and open up another way of viewing this world and recognition that it is a world within a world within a world. And that world itself is a word that's whirling around and spinning. So the word is like a verb, or it whirls the world. It puts a spin on the world, just like in, I guess it's pool or billiards, when you put a little English on the ball and it goes in a particular, maybe wonky direction. I'm not sure precisely what that means, but we have put so much English on the globe that it really spins consciousness to look at the life's dream through a particular lens. So most people find my work through the video I posted in 2010 called The Secret Spells of the English Language, which went, I don't like to say it went viral. The whole world went viral, perhaps because we affirmed it too long to many of us as a really good thing to have happen. And in many ways, I suppose for some of us, it was a recognition of the kind of spin that the mainstream narrative likes to put on our minds so that we lose our grounding on the earth and our allegiance first and foremost to the earth and to our own evolution as expressions like trees of the infinite creativity on earth, and each of us having a role that can lift whole consciousness on the planet as we come into greater communion and harmony with ourselves and discover why it is we chose to take birth and be here and now at this pivotal moment in the history of our species.
Mean, there's so much we can. I kept getting goosebumps as you were sharing a little fraction of the work you do, and I'm very I have so much respect for individuals like yourself that puts so much intention into each word. Just because I realized how little intention I at least consciously had in my language when I was speaking. I've become like a word geek in a way. I'm always very listening to people's words. In the work I do during transformational retreats around the world, I'm also very blessed to work with people from various nationalities, all the way from Saudi Arabia, Latin America, American speaking, like English speaking countries, different religious and backgrounds. But I find that the words or the intention behind the words are the same regardless. They have no boundaries lately. And I think when I became the most aware of the English and its power over the world, or the power we've given to the English language, was 2020, when the global happenings started to occur, and I started to see how people that were focusing on the narrative on newspapers and traditional media, their reality was completely different from maybe some of us that I was looking or paying attention to the news of the birds and the news. And for them, it was doomsday. And for some of us, we still have lots of respect and compassion for every individual in pain and suffering. But I started to realize how what we read, the information we put through words, and how we speak literally is, it's mapping out our reality.
Yes. And I like to point out that in many of us in preschool days would hear the nursery rhyme that says that flow gently and merrily down the stream, for life is but a dream. And the words life stream and life's dream and live stream, they're all the same sound. So I have a sense that here is this powerful mind that we have, that we are only just beginning to understand how much power we actually have through our thoughts and through our words to influence our experiences in the world. And so the possibility that the lens through which we perceive reality, much of which is shaped by the words we use, then becomes what the power, the light of mind projects through into the world. And years ago, I wrote a piece called Putting the Source Before Descartes. And in it, I state that let's see if maybe I can find it. But it's all about the fact that we are creating the life stream through the power of the mind, filtered through the words that form the lens through which we perceive it. And as we see it, so be it. And the Bible says, speak a word or and it shall be done unto you. And that life and death are in the power of the tongue. And so becoming more conscious of how we can use words with greater precision and beauty means that what is filtering through us and what is activating the cells within us is beautiful, healing, and uplifting rather than degrading, which is so often the case these days. So if you want to ask a question, and I'll hope I found Putting the Source Before Descartes, I'll just share a little bit about it. There's only circumstantial evidence to reality. Physicists doubt it exists in actuality, which means that matter, though it's seen, can disappear as in the dream because it ultimately lacks substantiality. We may describe what can't be sensed as utter nonsense, dismissing the ethereal as wholly immaterial, but more than matter matters and has consequence, for in truth, the incorporeal is very likely more real. And it goes on from there, but this is through my book, word magic, wordplay that puts a spin on the world. So yes, speak a thing, and it is done onto us, and learning has been a big journey for me to remember what I know about words and not allow the voice of emotion to take over the instrument. So
what you were just sharing of how we discard that what cannot be seen as nonsense, then I think the beautiful thing is that also science, even though we could go on and on talking about how science has been disregarding many of the teachings from the East or from the spiritual realms, thanks to people like Masaru Emoto saying that messages in the water, his study, how actually words, thoughts and words can imprint and imprint water. And speaking about words, if our body, they say there's like 75-80%. Now they're saying it could be up to the 95% water.
Yes. Yes.
We are constantly putting a message into our cells, into our DNA. But again, because conventional science disregards that which they don't understand. After the genome project, which was billions of dollars, disregarded 98% of our DNA, saying that it was junk DNA. And I wonder, and for me, this is nonsense. This is really nonsense. Speaking of nonsense, I wonder what traits, what attributes, what superpowers are we activating, or can we activate or access through wordplay?
No, what a fabulous question. So let me go within. Well, I mean, it's been the primary source of my education. I didn't grow up knowing that I was intelligent, and like many, didn't feel like I fit here, because none of us do. This is a planet we came to, especially now, to be of support for its evolution and our own evolution. So one of the stories I like to share is walking through a beautiful park overlooking the ocean, and I just casually thought inside my head, in the direction of my invisible friends, give me a new word. And they gave me true, I don't know, I don't want to use the word definition, and I'll explain that in a moment, or meaning, and I'll explain that as well. We don't have a beautiful word to describe what that short, compact vibration that we call words, what ideas that they are carrying. So what was revealed to me in that moment was that the true essence or formula for becoming beautiful is be you to full, because there's nothing more exquisite than the unique diamond being we are, radiating light through our multiple facets. And it doesn't, just like snowflakes and fingerprints, unique in the universe, as far as we know, being ourselves to the fullest is such a reminder to me when I'm feeling off center, or comparing myself adversely to others, that the more I know the reality of who this being is and what I have come to do, the more I am empowered to do it. So we know that words can lift our spirits and give us the courage to step forward, and they can also completely demoralize us. And Emoto's work, as you said, the photographic evidence in his books, Messages from Water, show the impact of words in different languages, even printed and taped on little pre-tested bottles of distilled water. So imagine the words we speak to ourselves, we think in our heads, we say to each other and to children. At the same time, saying sticks and stones can break my bones, but words can never harm me. I mean, that is a lie. And I mean, there's so much. I wish I had a thought to or think about, well, what are the superpowers? Power to speak a thing and have it manifest. And the more conscious we are of what we are speaking, the more beauty we can manifest in the world. So our language is like an entree into the world. And a sense that I've had for decades is I have felt like an exile from the nature kingdom, here to help humans harmonize their speech with Mother Nature's energies, so that when we speak, everything is lifted. Just like I believe crickets are pulse tuners, and bird songs awaken the growth of leaves. So we're all meant to be singular notes in the universe. And one of my word magic mottos is compose yourself, the music will follow. And since words are running through our minds 24/7 and beyond, becoming conscious of them, stopping them in their tracks, diverting them on another path, like positive self-regard instead of the deprecating self-regard, using mantras that inspirit us. All of these things can help us stay balanced in a world that's in a serious wobble, and use the power of the word as beings made in the image and likeness of whatever it is that is the ultimate creative source. And we can use this power to be modern day superheroes. And most every healthy child puts on a cape or a tiara with the recognition that who they are is so much grander than their body. And when we see ourselves from even just a little bit of a higher altitude, we see we're in this tiny little world, but we are so much more than that. And when I saw that the word infinite locates itself in finite forms, so there's no way, just like a bubble of the ocean or a wave can never be separate from the ocean, even though it arises mighty in the moment, it then goes back to source as we do in every moment. So using the power of the word to create a path through our life that brings us healing and upliftment, and that to same to other people, is where the really good feelings are.
Wow. I really resonate with how you were saying that we are all part of instrument of creation, same as the bird song enhances the trees to grow its leaves.
Yes.
I've been coming to the conclusion that through his story, right, as you were explaining in some of your texts and videos, we've come out of tune, and we're the only animals, even though sometimes we believe that we're very smart, very advanced, which we have the potential for that, we're the only ones living on the planet Earth, the only animal living out of tune. Everybody knows what to do, like the birds know what to do, the gorilla knows what to do, the dolphins know what to do, for sure the dolphins. As humans, what has happened throughout history for us to get out of tune? Because if the only purpose in life is for me to be in tune with my true core self, and that's what will make the grass grow in its own way and the birds sing, how have we been conditioned throughout history through our language? Because nations have been built through words, and nations have been destroyed through words. Millions of people have been killed through the words of some, and millions have been liberated through the words of some, like Nelson Mandela has done, or Gandhi.
Yes. Quote, I think, from Joseph Chilton Pierce, that without language, there would be no poetry and no war. So Sanskrit, I believe the word Sanskritam means the perfected language, where the vibration of the sound matches what it is describing and calls upon the sounds of the names of the deities and the devas, calls upon them in their correct address. So there is response. And Sanskrit was, though many linguists describe the mother tongue of many European tongues as Proto-Indo-European or Pi, but there's no documentation that exists of such a language. It's more like a way not to have to acknowledge the ancient Indian culture and Sanskrit as the source of so much of everything, of astronomy and astrology and medicine and even before feng shui, I think it's astu shastra. Don't know quite exactly, but it's like all of this wisdom, and there is the belief in India that it isn't a language that evolved over time and changed from what it was to what it is now. There were so many safeguards put in place. I believe they're called the six Vedangas or Veda Angas, to make sure that there wasn't the kind of linguistic drift that has happened in English that causes, I mean, we would not understand a speaker of Old English or even Middle English. And I had, so now I'm just going to dance and, you know, we'll see where it goes. Very early in my life, I felt very connected to the moon, and I had all sorts of questions about it. And I've had some, like, how do we come together with another person until we've centered the moon in our own being? And I didn't ask because everyone thought it was such a primitive question, so basic. How do you live a life unless you have the answer? And no one spoke of it. So I thought I was the only one who didn't know the answer. So that's a whole other story that goes somewhere that we don't need to go. But I simply bring it up because I've had this intimate connection with the moon. And I learned just by chance that the first English printer, I think in the 15th century, named William Caxton, said that speaking English is like people who are native speakers, it's like being born under the domination of the moon. And well, what was that? I certainly have been that, and I think we all are. And what I believe he meant was that it was so different from one shire to the next, how it sounded, that it was very mutable and like silver. And it certainly has been prone to rust. And so many beautiful words have been lost that could increase our sense of human possibilities, or their meaning has been downgraded. And just many left out of the dictionary, not really taught in school. So people are speaking a very low grade level of English without being aware that the language is alive and in an elemental way. It's like energetic frequencies invoked by these symbols, carried by the symbols and articulated through us, that certainly can influence the atmosphere around us. And atmosphere is a very curious word. I mean, there are so many words in English that aren't betraying us. And when I put together the what I call our premier life sentence, which is we awake each morning and go off through the weekdays to earn our living at various jobs and undertakings until we come to weekend. So if people want to hear that, it's called The Secret Spells in the English Language. It's on YouTube and I posted it in 2010. But there was a big so what to me when I put that sentence together. The first was, well, the so what was, this is very curious, what do we do about it? But the other so what was, how did this come about? And so all of my work is basically conjecture on my part. I've come to see many things and put them together in a particular way. My conjecture about this is that when English was streaming in from, you know, all the different conquerors of that little island, England, so all of these sorts of influences were kind of coagulating into a single language, but very different in various different parts of that little tiny country. So I look at it as molten streams of consciousness. And the most powerful cultural influence at the time was the ancient church. So its vision of a universe divided by irreconcilably conflicting male superpowers, the fallen state of humanity, the misery of life, and the inferiority of women is all over the English language. And for most of us in the US, regrettably myself as well, we speak one language. There's only one perception of reality, one lens through which to visualize reality. And this negative cosmology of the ancient church, I believe, was an energy that imprinted itself on the language when it was this molten stream of consciousness. So that, for instance, that life sentence that I shared, or the fact that atmosphere and nervous system, I mean, these are programs. Just about every word and the symbols of the alphabet we have thought were meaningless symbols from meaningless sounds. However, they are actually pictograms. And I have a lengthy piece on the letter S, which many alphabets tried to exclude because they looked upon it as a symbol of the serpent and of Satan. So some cultures did exclude it. And the C with the little cedilla under it in French and Portuguese definitely is an indication of that because it's a C pronounced as S without using that letter to share. So the final thing I'll say about the moon, because I can go in so many directions, sometimes I feel a little like Alice in Wonderland, or more likely than Cheshire Cat, because so many directions one can take when talking about words. But recognizing the moon as force that controls the tides, and our moods control our thoughts, and our thoughts can control our words. So becoming more conscious, if we were all to become a whole lot more conscious that we have the power of all creation on the tip of our tongue, then what we could ultimately do is working in concert and consort with the moon, in fanciful metaphoric language, we could help turn the tide on the global sea of consciousness, S-E-E. So we can become metaphor tellers and envision a new live stream in which people are harmoniously in tune with creation together, so that each of us can more readily self-optimize and self-actualize, so that we're harmonizing together at a higher frequency. And one of the interesting things about English, which has put such a spin on the world, it is the major colonizer of human consciousness, which means that there are more English speakers in the world, and it puts a very divisive worldview in our consciousness. And the so what I got about that life sentence that reflects a concept of a universe where God and the devil are battling for who will gain eternal control of this weak little being that we are, yet have power to create transformation personally and globally. I believe that we can, through conscious language and wordplay and creativity, we can be informed by the English language to find more and more of what I call its secret spells, as well as the sacred pathways, like the very fact that earth and heart are the same word, different only by the placement of the H. I mean, I've asked children this. You can ask yourselves, and maybe should before I volunteer anything. But one of my little taglines is that word magic turns youngsters into punsters and punsters into pundits, in the ancient Sanskrit meaning of a very wise being. And children are certainly very wise beings because they haven't been programmed. And many of them have direct, well, I think all of them at an early age, as Charles Bukowski, the press German-American 20th century poet, said that most all of us are born geniuses and very idiots. And that the idioms can be edify us, not edify us. You can turn us into idiots, like wishing someone good luck in a performance by saying break a leg instead of sprout a wing or touch a heart. So lots of healing work to do on the English language. And according to what I read in a book by William Henry, an historian and mythologist, it is English that is the language of birds. However, you said it's more like angelish. I mean, this is our moment. We are here because this is the moment. We can envision extraordinary self-actualization and conscious unification with infinite love, intelligent power, and start using it as metaphor tellers, where we are foretelling the future. We are talking about the beauty of what we are creating, where it truly is a commonwealth of communities of varying sizes, where everyone is contributing their wealth of beauty and wisdom and insight and knowledge and all the ways they've cultivated it and unfolded for the greater good of all. And then everybody prospers in a very healthy body.
I love how you share this excitement. And through all these different routes and journeys that words can take you and are taking you and you're taking us to them. And I love that it's not like a linear, because I think that's what that linear thinking or that linear way of speaking is what has gotten us in the where we are, at least as a global society. Many of us already doing the work to come out of that linear thinking, that more patriarchal or male-oriented way of thinking, and speaking our words in a more popcorn, beautiful rainbow set with all the colors and all the flavors that they can bring and are bringing. I I resonate a lot with how you're connecting this with Sanskrit and the yogic teaching philosophy science. For me, it's the yogic science of self-realization has been a very important topic for me in recent years as well, because Paramahansa Yogananda was saying that, as a matter of fact, Sanskrit is connected, each letter of Sanskrit is connected with our nadi system, and our nadi system is all birthed from our crown chakra and our brain. So literally every word is connected to a part of our energy body. So, and this is scientific yogic teachings, which maybe we don't have the tools to measure everything right now, but I keep saying science is catching up to the ancient ways of our teachers.
Well, just to interrupt you for one moment, if you please will not lose your place. I have a quote somewhere by the 20th century physicist, maybe he lived into the 21st. No, John Wheeler, saying it at the end of all my, you know, all my mathematical equations, I expect to find a rishi.
Yes.
In science, so much the slow younger brother of mysticism. So to have our most advanced science come to his recognition that the ancients knew all this before.
They knew all this before, for certain. And in this podcast, this is like life alchemy and the work I do, like as you were saying, how can, when somebody asks me, like, what do you do? Like, it's so broad, but at the same time, so simple. And it was like life alchemy, like through our thoughts, feelings, actions, words or actions, and making our actions meet our words, we become the alchemist of our life, and thus creating the life that we have envisioned or have been dreaming for so long.
Yes.
And words are like the magic potions. Sometimes people come to work with me and they're like, how can I, they expect to get, I don't know, like a jar of some magical potion, or, and yeah, there's plant medicine, there's so many, there's yogic techniques of breath work, or you can put your foot behind your head and access certain information. But I know for you, John D, the sorcerer, the magician, the alchemist, was a big influence in your life. And that's exactly what he was doing. He was performing life alchemy in the high courts of England and to create world peace.
I believe John D was a big influence on a prior life of mine. I really, just quickly, well, two things. When you talked about life alchemy, I've liked playing with the fact that life alchemy is transforming base metal, METTLE, which has to do with quality of mind. And somewhere I saw a definition where it had to do also with the ability to rise to kind of a, you know, occasions to challenge us and to persevere and to have equilibrium, resilience through it. So to change base metal, very low quality of mind, from lead, LED, where people like get led around like sheep, which is the metaphor of a religious believer. So some lead to gold. And so that could be GOALED, which we could use to represent intention. So being led around by, and everyone knows how easy it is to lead sheep to slaughter, whichever end of the blade you're talking about, to be a slaughterer, to be slaughtered. Yeah. So to let go of looking outside ourselves for someone to lead us in the right direction, as if they could possibly know where we're meant to go as unique beings on our own path, which we, from what I've read, probably contributed to creating. So, prior to our life, in this incarnation, so John D. and me, I wrote what I call my seriography, which is about an elemental being who goes through the looking glass into this dimension and has to deconstruct the language to find her way back home again. And deep into it, I wanted a wish granting poem. And I wanted it to have magical syllables like bibbidi bobbidi boo, but I wanted them all to have content, not just sound. So, first two stanzas came very quickly. With cryptic Kabbalistic tricks, I fix elixirs that eclipse linguistic mixtures to transfix. As fertile verbal herbalist and hypnotist gibberish, I stir within my crucible all elements reducible to simple symbols that eclipse the prospects of apocalypse. So when that came through, I wondered, well, what's prospects for apocalypse doing in my pretty little fairy poem? But there it was. And years later, I read a book called Healing Mantras by Ashley Farron. At least I think that's where I found it. He spoke about in the court of Elizabeth I, John Dee was the most educated in all the arts, the esoteric arts, the sciences, and anyone else in her court. And there was the belief at the time that structured metered verse paired with sound, beautiful music, could calm hostilities. And we certainly know that. Beautiful words, beautiful music help us relax. So he was working with a cabal of French and English poets to create just such verse as like a secret weapon for world peace. That's how, anyway. So when I read that, I said I was there. And that's why I believed when I was 3 or 4 that I now know all the words in the English language. I came in very tuned to it and to doing this work. So I have not really looked at the work of John Dee. And so the influence, as I said, was prior to this life.
Yeah.
Give us a word. Beg your pardon? Yes.
Sometimes we don't have to research anything to remember.
Thank you. And that reminded me of a wonderful word about memory that is the perfect example, as far as I know, of a word that when we know it, it enhances our sense of access that we have to all that we are, past, present, and future, if time can really actually be measured that way. But the word that talks about it, it still exists, but its second definition is laughably degraded. The first is soul's recollection of what it knew from a prior lifetime. And usually when I look it up, it's supposed prior lifetime. There's quote marks around it because Christianity took the idea of reincarnation out of their sacred texts a long time ago. That and karma, or we would be living in a very different world right now.
Yes.
So the word is anamnesis, the soul's recollection of what it knew from a prior lifetime. So can you imagine, say you've had maybe 1,000 lifetimes here, you're still a youngster, but wow, did you learn a lot? And did you on so many levels? And how about just inviting all that collective wisdom to presence itself in our awareness so we can draw upon it when we need to, and of course augmenting through everything we're interested in studying. The second definition is anamnesis, this glorious vision of possibilities. The second definition, patients recounting of their medical history.
So different at the same time, huh?
Yes, don't you wonder how that all happened?
Wow.
And yeah, there's gorgeous words that are basically unknown, but that you can't, like I like to use the example, excuse me, of Philokalis, which I found by lucky chance. It's great having a great big old dictionary. Definitions are being changed all the time. And while I mention definition, I'll say why I don't like to use it, because we claim ourselves to be of sound mind, but we're basically deaf to our definitions. Our definition deafens us to hearing the reverberations and their very curious repercussions. So, for instance, the word pray, P-R-A-Y. Well, that sounds like a good thing to do, but then there's also P-R-E-Y, pray. And there's prophet Jesus or Muhammad, and prophet, what's made on the birthday celebration leading up to it by merchandisers. And I heard a commentator once say, Jesus would probably be so chagrined to know he had become the patron saint of fourth quarter prophets. I mean, is that really nuts? But a lot of these words do not derive from the same source. People think etymology is where it's at. Well, what was it originally intended to say? You can't trust that what you're hearing is accurate, or what you're reading is accurate. And a lot of it is another form of wordplay, people making up origins. So it's not like this is science, just like what I'm doing isn't. But okay, let me find my thread of thought. Or you can interject a question, but a moment of silence will be helpful. Thank you. So, as it turns out, English is the language of the birds, and we can tune it up. We can do a creative, collective upgrade of the language. And I have a vision for it of a literary lotto where people will be incentivized with profit motive, meaning both forms of profit, and to ask inwardly and download new words, phrases, symbols, sounds, and metaphors that can convey a higher frequency of consciousness in our communications, because English can't hold it. We don't have the word to possibly conceptualize possibilities. And so a higher frequency of consciousness in our communications, and inspire a greater frequency of kindness in our interactions. For the way I look at the earth heart paradigm, same word, placement of letter H, is that the purpose of life is not to get ahead of everyone else in the human race. It's about getting a heart full of love for everyone. For the first and foremost antidote to the global warming of the earth is global warming of the heart. Because how else will we act compassionately with each other? Anyway. Definition. I don't like to use the word definition because we have been deaf to our sounds. And the word meaning, what does the word mean? Well, what does the word mean? And I have a little list here. Maybe I don't. But it means many things. It means shabby and cruel and average, many other definitions, but they're all basically negative.
Wow.
And then the word demeaning. I mean, the language is kind of eating us up as it is right
face.
Now.
So in our face. Some people think like this is some secret society mission. No, it might source from there, but so in our face, in the newspaper, in the radio, if you do listen or read those things, in our media, in the lyrics of the artists that are so popular that you pay attention to the lyrics and you see that they're literally spelling a reality that is
so much
pain in our childs, which are our future. Children of the earth are the future of the earth.
And yes.
How are we going to ever achieve that heartwarming global awakening if our children are listening to profanity, literally profanity through the lyrics, talking about abuse? Girls are dancing to songs of other girls being abused. And it is because we become so deaf by the definition. And hearing you share a little bit, because I think we could be going for hours and hours on this, a little bit of the insights you've been recalling, as we were saying, since you were age 3, I can't help but thinking about, like, I always share this, I like the word codes, and I always like to share codes, because I don't like teaching lessons, but codes really resonates with me, and I always say ABC. Always be coding. Many people will always go to always be closing. If you have that business mindset, ABC, always be closing.
Yes.
Always be coding. And we're always literally coding our existence, and we're coding our life into existence or into destruction. But I know we've been talking that there's this virus in our coding. And what would be a very tangible way to reclaim back our coding? Because everybody's coding. Even though most are not aware, everybody's coding. So from the work you're doing with people, you're working with thousands of people around the world, you've lived in different places, what could be a very tangible way for somebody to start reclaiming their life through their words?
Such a beautiful question. Thank you. So, just to complete the little sketch of the literary lotto, where people, anyone can do this now, just start opening and asking for a new word, a new phrase that promotes beauty and not the beast. And that's what we're looking to enrich. And we can do it. Give me a new word. Like once, I mean, it's so much fun because words are these electromagnetic vibrations and each syllable can scintillate. And we can create this kind of energetic massage of our own body, mind, being, and for other people when the words are beautiful and musical. So the literary lotto, people will be incentivized through the profit motive to download and send in phrases and such, and those that we decide we like well enough to market them. The person who received them will be honored, and the proceeds from the marketing will percentage certainly go to the one who received this. And part of this is to incentivize inner listening for many things wider than bringing in a word. But in terms of the power of a word, many people still remember when the phrase, something like commit random acts of kindness and acts of senseless beauty. So I was looking that up once to find out where it originated. And the story on Wikipedia was there was a woman in a cafe in Sausalito writing on a napkin. And who knows how it spread throughout the world. But people, strangers, were doing acts of kindness, like going on a toll bridge and paying for the person behind. And it was a contagion. And a contagion of kindness. And if you just imagine where everywhere you turn, you're going to meet with kindness Are you going to share kindness with someone? Again, it's an energetic massage for which I invented the word metatranssensuous supersexual parahedonism, which is about the exquisite pleasure that comes through loving kindness. And okay, I could probably dance my way back in terms, yes, so playing with words, asking inwardly for a new word. I mean, I have gotten a lot of mileage on single words or single rhymes. Such I know a lot of my work by heart because playing with the magnets of rhyming words, I deposit an electropoetic force, brings them across continents, cultures, and centuries to come into the same vibration, like pray and prey, or words that are just so exquisitely, scintillatingly, quintessentially magic and have like super vitamins, and Sanskrit is filled with them. English, we can begin to upgrade this language of birds, this ancient language of the birds, word by word, phrase by phrase, and very helpful to have a team to work with so that we can put together this vision into reality. So
it's happening.
It is happening. It is happening and creating beauty. Oh my goodness, as you say, we're almost completely water, and so is the planet. So if beauty is what is coming out of our mouths, and we're creating beauty on t-shirts and bumper stickers or whatever that inspires the best instead of the beast in us all, I mean, my goodness, how quickly we could do that.
I guess there's probably the biggest blockage, or the biggest thing probably separating people from taking action or embodying these teachings, as far as I've witnessed so far, is the mindset of owning your life, because it's so easy to blame others, blame the world, expect others to save us or to fix the world. But something so simple yet not always so easy as reclaiming our words is the best way to save not only ourselves but also the world. So I think the work you're sharing, which is like first of all, be open to new ways of understanding the language, as you were saying, meaning and definition, they're mean, and it makes you deaf by the own sense of the word. So I think the first step, as I'm understanding, is to be open to the magic of words, allowing new words to land, and also letting go of our interpretation of other words that most definitely were passed down by generations, our parents, society, the system, and healing through the power of the word.
Yes, yes. Well, when you talk about the generational misuse of language, so often someone will say to another, "How are you?" And the other person will say, "I can't complain." Or, "How do you like this? What's not to like?"
Not too bad.
Yeah, not too bad. Exactly. So we're downgrading ourselves. We're talking us our way into a very low level of living. When
I'm excited for the weekend, right?
Yes, exactly. So I can get progressively weakened. And until, as you may know, some people in Britain call a decade a decade. It's like, in the Bible, it says the handwriting was on the wall, but today it's all over the language. But we're taught to ignore the obvious. And in fact, the word, we are oblivious to the obvious. And the difference between those two words is just li. They're the same word with a lie in between.
And we're so oblivious that we will turn on the TV to program ourselves. Like it's our responsibility. One thing is that somebody's pulsating it, but we are responsible for what we program ourselves with or what we liberate ourselves with. But people, yes, literally, we get a remote and we choose how to program ourselves. It's so in our face.
It is. I think in order for a lie to sustain itself, it has to have an activating element of truth in it. And if you look at the word a lie, two words, and then put them together and add a V, which is like a wedge, the tip of an arrow, lands in the right place and a lie becomes alive. So it needs that energy of truth to have the activating power of spirit, I guess. And so, yeah, I mean, we're inside a serious program here. It's so all pervasive. Our whole bodies are programmed in it. The economy is programmed in it. Native English speakers in the U.S. have lost much of their skill with it. Very few have a recognition that it is alive and talking to us all the time, informing us in all sorts of ways through symbols and sounds that we may or may not hear.
Even our medical institutions, which when I as far as I know, when you become a doctor, you hold yourself as a standard of health. Somebody comes as your patient, has to be like very patient, I'm understanding now, to learn that they have a disease. And it's so disempowering, like this Mr. X, you have a disease. And I understand that we also don't have to avoid what is happening. We could always say like there's a energetic misalignment. There's a key out of tune. But as soon as you say you're a disease, it's like you have a problem. Now you're my patient and you need me to help you. It's like so disempowering.
Completely. The healthcare system is not about preserving health, but compromising it and creating dependency on chemicals. Better living through chemistry was a advertising motto of some company years ago. So we are under an alchemical spell. We're in a language that's all turned around. In my fairyography, my character, Philomela Nightingale, says, "I was born in upside down town to the king and queen of backward land. I spoke a foreign language, which they had to understand. The king was sowing sorrow and the queen was reaping grief. I held my dreams but lost my way, confused beyond belief." So I have long looked at this dimension as backward land. And then in a wonderful forward to a wonderful book called The Way of Weird, Tales of an Anglo-Saxon Sorcerer, the forward was written by Dr. Fred Wolf. And he said that when the Christians came to power in the British Isles, everything that was native to the people was considered pagan and was reversed 180 degrees. And when I read that, I thought, oh my gosh, that's backward land. And it said that this affects everything in your world today, including your language. So we can tune it up. I have my word magic anthem is called Taking Command of the English Language. It's also on YouTube. I recorded it at the same time. So in my website, wordmagicglobal.com, I will soon have posted on it the beginning of the vision and opportunity through the Word Magic Literary Lotto. So please check it out, stay attuned, and make music in your ordinary speech.
And so blessed to know that there's word angels coming through in this dimension, remembering their past lives, a whole new level of vibrational attunement for many of us to remember that it is possible, one word at a time, to create heaven on earth in this planet that is in so much need for us. We think that the planet is getting warm, that there's global warming, that there's all this chaos in the planet. Really, it's an inner chaos that is expressed through our words. So I'm very grateful for the work you're doing. And I know you host every month three sessions called Sacred Rites, where you work with people, allowing them to bring in creativity and their heart's melody through words. But I know you have a new offering coming up in this year, 2023.
Yes, I will once again be sharing, making light of the English language in support of our collective evolution. And it's a four-part class. It's really a play shop where we play with words. I introduce secret spells, and others share the ones they've found, and the same with sacred passwords, words like, well, Dissy's or his story. It's like a password, but more in terms of, for me, really beautiful, that you can't have a planet without plants. See? All you need is an E, which is the initiator of evolution, as we know in our story about Eve and Adam in Eden, attacked by evil. And now we're hit e-commerce and e-business. E is the most used word in used letter in the alphabet, and it's also obviously something that eases our way forward if we allow it to do that.
Which I know you have a whole ebook that anybody listening to this, you can download totally for free. There'll be a link on the description for this video. I just want to share with you something very special. We were in Egypt in the Temple of Man, which is the Temple of Luxor. And we were with a group this past December. We're in the center where it's like supposed to be like the heart area, the chest area of the temple. And we were standing there, and suddenly, like, we realized what the word mystery meant. And it makes so much more sense understanding your new, the awareness you bring into his story. History,
yes,
almost their story, the story we've been given or sold. And mystery is my story.
Yeah.
And I love how the work you're doing, it brings so much mystery into life, so much magic, so much spells, making my story so much more abundant, so colorful.
Thank you. And yeah, I don't know if we have another few moments. So what you brought up, because I also hear Miss Tree, and I, a young girl, wanted to marry a tree, and someone in my writing group who remembered her whole lifetime at the age of 5, she told her mother she wanted to be a tree. They're so rooted, and they are such expressions of nobility, and we can be that as well. So here's a little piece, not too long at all, called Metapoetic Logarithms. As a daughter of my mother tongue, I'm old as earth, thus ever young, and blessed with alchemistic gifts to write transforming hieroglyphs and speak whenever she elects those elemental dialects by which the savage beast is charmed and human animosities disarm. But to do so, I first turned to the moon and I asked to be filled with her lovely light lamps, her lambent light love songs and sylvan refrains. Her kinetic, prophetic, alphabetic poems, with their hologrammatic, logarithmic, magnetics, and ecstatic electrokinetics, has the power, I am told, to alchemically unfold changing base metal from lead to gold. Not quite a perfect. No more flimsy whimsy or slight gimcrack knickknackery of decorative frivolity will I pass this poetry. No periphrastic skimble scamble, nipperty tipperty sham preamble, niminy piminy something gamble will I pass off as my verbal gambles, but rainbow rhymestone incantations, metamorphic meditation. My goodness, I thought I could remember it. It's in my book. Will I pass off for my incantations, but rainbow rhymestone sound sensations, incandescent incantations, metamorphic meditations, inviolate communications, inscribed in such electric writings that hearts ignite, souls igniting.